Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It is Saturday, February 22nd, 2020. And welcome to another episode of the Saturday Spotlight with your boy, the one and only, that's E-R-Y, not R-E-Y, R-O-S-H-E-L-L, Jeffrey Rochelle. And as I said, it is another edition of the Saturday Spotlight. Tonight we talk to my author friend, my homeboy, author Navi Robbins. We talk to author Navi Robbins. Author Navi Robbins is not only an author, he is a graphic designer, a man of many talents. He does it all, and we talk to him tonight. But before we do that, let's recap my week as usual. So, where do I start? Do I want to talk about these taxes that everybody's waiting on, or the Trunchbull, as I call her, from Matilda that I work for now? Well, let's talk about taxes first. So I got word today as I looked on, got on Facebook, that some people that had a date for their taxes, just like me, and it went pending, they got another date. Well, needless to say, I didn't get the date again. So I'm like waiting. I just want to know, what was the IRS's problem this year? Because last year and the year before that, I never had this issue. Like, I always filed my taxes the first, either the end of January or the first week of February, and I usually have them back by now. And I thought I would have had them on the 18th, and like I said, it went from the 18th to a message of pending. So now I'm like, now that I really need the money too, it's like, where's my refund at? I've been checking every day. I've seen all my other little friends. Shout out to my author friend, Ashante Keys, with her funny memes that she puts up about the IRS on a daily basis and how she needs her refund. And author Javante, she does them too. But it's just those funny memes that people have been putting up, and just me too questioning, like, where's my refund? Like, I need my money. I need it now. And it's like when you're looking for something and you really need it, it's like that's when it's a delay on it. I don't know if nobody else has noticed that, but that's me personally. I always notice when I need something, it's always a delay on it. So I'm patiently waiting on my taxes, but I had so many plans to do things with my money before I got paid next Friday, and needless to say, I couldn't do any of that because I have not gotten my refund. So it's like I'm waiting on my paycheck from my job and my refund, and I thought my refund was going to kind of offset that, I should say, but it did not. So I'm patiently waiting. And then we'll come. I heard some people say they're getting their refund Tuesday and the next week, Wednesday or next week. So maybe they'll go ahead and give me that message with, hey, we got your refund processing on this date and you give it to me. But I'm really wondering, like, what took the IRS so long, especially with people like me that filed early, to get their taxes so late in the game now? I hope that doesn't happen next year. Now, to talk about my new job and the problems that I am having at this job. As you all know who've listened last week, I started to talk about the recent problems that I'm having at my new place of work with my supervisor and the position that I took on recently. Just now, it's been 3 weeks, as of 3 weeks this past Friday. So, as you all know, I took on a new position in the billing department at a company, and I had no experience in this billing department, come from no background of it, but I went to school for medical billing and coding recently and got my cert. So the same supervisor I'm having problems with is the same person that interviewed me and questioned each other with our different interview questions. One of my questions was, how analytically hard and challenging is this department that you have me in? She went on to say, oh, you can catch on to it. It's pretty easy. You won't have any problems with the training that we give. And even if you don't get it in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, you got all the training time in the world to get this department. This came from the supervisor who is giving me hell every day. And when I say hell, I really mean hell. So the first incident was the yelling. The yelling started when, as you all know that listened last week, I had a situation with a problem on Excel, and I was trying to get to it, and because I wasn't getting to it quick enough for her, she raised her voice. I give you 3 strikes with anything with me. So at that point, when I had given her the 3-strike mode, I kind of took it in, but I said, you know what, I kind of want to address it because it is bothering me, because I really felt like, which really was the truth, it really was no call for the yelling of the action of taking it when you were giving me instruction, especially when I'm in training and getting something. So when I talked to her about it at that point, she apologized. She even went on to apologize and send me an apologetic email to my email at the job. I said, okay, you know, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. Maybe she is sincere about her apology. She went on even to say, you know, we have to watch our voice inflections on how we talk to people because everybody looks at things different, yada, yada, yada. And again, I apologize. I feel bad, and I, you know, like I said, she told me in the email, you know, you're new, you know, we're processing things, so that's fine. Wham, out the door. Well, again, that same week, Thursday, because this incident was Monday, and I addressed it Tuesday. Thursday of last week, she went on, she raised her voice again, and this time she raised her voice and blatantly yelled out what I was struggling with in the department so everybody can hear. At that point, I said, no, here's the 3-strike mode. Gave you one time, here we go again. Second time, I'm going to talk to you. So I came into the office, talked to her, expressed how I felt, and her whole attitude about it was, well, you know, this is going on, and you have an up and down period, and now you're starting to notice, as I've came to you before, what I'm struggling with in the department. Now you're starting to notice these things, but now your attitude is changing because I knew, you know, I had no experience, but I'm not catching on to things at your pace. But I told you this in the beginning. You knew this in the beginning when you hired me because you knew I had no experience. So, needless to say, things have kind of taken a toll for the worse. After that second incident of yelling at me and, you know, kind of wasn't the medium, email, just expressing how I felt, just letting her know that, okay, you know, I've only been here 2.5, almost 3 weeks, and this is not good. I haven't experienced this ever at any position I've taken in my time of employment of being on this earth for 39 years almost. I've never had this type of behavior towards me or had this type of attitude or just had this type of, you know, hostile environment that I'm working in, you know, and I just want to express to you how I felt. She read that email, and she responded with a whole bunch of negative, this and that, how I need to take responsibility for who I am in this position, how she is going to continue. Now, I just told you guys that she apologized. She went on in this new email to tell me she is going to continue to talk to me any kind of way she wants. And if it needs be to be a hostile tone, she's going to keep doing it because she'll do it with everybody else in the group, so she'll do it with me. At that point, that was the only thing that I concentrated on in that email when I saw that, because I was seeing red. I was already seeing red because you raised your voice at me again after you apologized for it. But now I'm seeing red now because you're justifying what you apologized for in your first email. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do you just like how y'all would do us, because she's a white girl. And let me clear this up. I have white friends. I love white people. I cannot put white people in that same category and vote. I have white people in my family. They all are not the same. It's a vast majority of them that have that mentality that this supervisor of mine has, but there are some of them that actually understand what other minorities have went through, but preferably African Americans, and they're not like that. So we can't put everybody in that boat that's of a Caucasian descent. Like I said, I have them in my family. I'm friends with them, and I don't see a color. But I'm not understanding why the supervisor of mine does not see a color. We're going to get to that after I explain what I'm talking about now. So with this email, let me go back to that. It was this whole, I'm going to talk to you any kind of way I want to, this and that and blah, blah, blah. So when I read that, because when she sent this response back, it was the next day because I sent that email to her when I left the office. I believe it was Wednesday or something like that. But when she sent it back, at that point when I read that, I immediately typed her and I said, well, you know, if the hostile infliction of your voice continues and this goes on, I will have no problem but meeting with your manager in HR. To think that I was going to get a, okay, let's talk, you know, this and that, blah, blah, blah. What's the real problem here? What's going on? No, didn't get all that. She wrote me back, I will continue to talk to you any kind of way that I want to. You, if need be warranted, I'll keep doing it. It's you and the group. I said, at this point, I'm not going to argue back and forth with you. I'm going to be shut up. So I won't go, because she wants to go back tit for tat. I saw that. I said, no, because what you want me to do is you want me to come in that office and cuss you out. That's what you want me to do, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to sit back on my ass and let you get rid of me so I can collect unemployment. That's how we're going to do this now. I already got a plan in place. So I didn't say anything back to her. I gathered up every email that she'd give me from the time this started till now. I forwarded them all to my regular email at home, and I called HR and I explained the situation to her. So when I explained the situation to the HR lady, she listened. But then it struck a nerve with me, and my ears perked up like a dog and a cat when she went on to say, I've never had an issue out of Ms. Pintaris since she's been in this department. Wrong thing to say to me, HR lady. I don't want to hear that. I'm telling you what problem I have with the supervisor. Your whole response to that should have not been what you said. So I said at that point to her too, okay, I kept it cool. I said, well, you know, I didn't say anything else. My plan is in place because now you telling me this, I'm going to take this over your head and I'm going to call the EEOC. I'm going to file a complaint that way because that's letting me know that you're going to go back and talk to her about what I said, but you're going to be on her side with this because you've never had a problem out of her the time that she's been with the company. Well, I'm telling you right now I have a problem with her. And instead of you saying, okay, I'll look into it, you got to throw your two cents in and say that. That wasn't merited and called for. I don't care how you look at it. You should have just told me I'm going to look at it, and that's it. So on Friday, because like I said, she talked to her that day, she comes out, my supervisor, with her laptop, and says, okay, everything that you have a problem with, we're going to write the directions down and I'm going to explain it to you. I looked at her because at that point I'm saying, after 3 weeks of being here and telling you what I'm struggling with, why do you want to come out now and do your damn job? Why do you want to come out now and be the supervisor that you should have been when I first started with the company 3 weeks ago? Why did I have to call HR on you to do that? So as she went on to explain the problems that I had with the spreadsheet that I was doing on Excel, she had to throw a little two cents in there because y'all know she pissed because I called HR. So she in there typing up her directions on everything that I had to do. And every time she typed the directions for a different invoice, same thing here. Blah, 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 same thing here. Blah, 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 same thing here. And I'm sitting there like, would you just type these directions? I don't need to hear your same things here. So she went on to also look at me and say, so how would you like me to word these directions? I turned around and looked at her and said, thorough and complete, so I can answer and understand them. So then she went on to show me something on the computer, and she started talking fast. I said, hold up, let's take this slow because I need to understand what I'm doing. So at that point, she left me to do the spreadsheet. She left me to do everything that day, and I clocked out, said goodbye to the people in the group I work with because I'm the only African-American male over there, and I know they be talking ish about me when I leave because she's cool with all of them, and I don't care. But to be in an environment like that where you're not communicating with your coworkers and you're new, it's easier said than done when people can say, you know, You go to work and you go home. But being in an environment like that, that's not good. So now I'm on my hunt for looking for another job because I came to a company thinking that I was coming from where I was coming from to get a better opportunity. And to be showed this, it's uncalled for. It's disrespectful. And I'm telling anybody else that's out here dealing with this, you don't have to deal with this. You don't have to take any BS from a job just because you got a job and you feel like you need it. No, you should be able to go to work and be comfortable. And especially when you're the only minority in the group, you would think that people like that would look at that. And you don't know how far I can go with that. And she don't know who I know. I could know Jesse Jackson, Kim Fox. You don't know who I know and you messing with me. And then you also don't know if I got a crazy baby mama. You don't know if I got a crazy mama, sisters, cousins that will wait in the parking lot for you to walk your ass out the building and tag you up out there. You don't know none of that. You just doing what you're doing because you work in a department and you got a title over your head. So I don't understand what her problem is and why she acts like it is. But when this is all over with, I'll be glad. When it's all said and done and I'm sitting in there, I'm going to tell her thank you because you did both of us a favor. And if I'd have known this, I would have never came here. So thank you. I appreciate that. I'm happy about it. So I'm here dealing with this now, and I know, like I said, soon it'll be all over with. But I'm going to thank her. Thank you. And I also may tell her when I walk up out of there, too, by the way, you know the day you were sitting there training me, you were smelling a little bit like fish. So I think you need to take care of that problem while you sit up here with an attitude with me, while you don't like black, while you sit up here smelling like a whole can of tuna, like Queen of the Sea on 87th and Stone. You need to take care of that and don't worry about having an attitude with me. So this is what I'm dealing with now. So needless to say, I'll update y'all every week. And anybody out here that knows any customer service jobs, any medical receptionist jobs, billing jobs, hit me up, inbox me, let me know, because I am looking. I'm back on my hunt. All right. So, as always, this show is sponsored by Beggar's Pizza in Gary, Indiana. They're open till 12 a.m. tonight, and their address is 4345 South Broadway in Gary, Indiana, and their phone number is 219-951-0695. That's Beggar's Pizza in Gary, Indiana. They're open till midnight tonight, and their phone number is area code 219-951-0695. And Mickey's on Stoney, home of the famous jerk fries. They're open till 1 a.m. tonight. Their address is 8126 South Stoney Island in Chicago, and their phone number is 773-902-2800. That's Mickey's on Stoney, home of their famous jerk fries. Open till 1 a.m. tonight, and their phone number is 773-902-2800. And Raise the Bar, located at 3350 West 159th Street in Markham, Illinois, serving sweet, hot food, and customized treats. Try their weekly food specials. Raise the Bar is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., and their phone number is 708-566-4088. That's Raise the Bar, located at 3350 West 159th Street in Markham, Illinois, and their phone number is 708-566-4088. And Pop Culture Gourmet Popcorn, not only serving you caramel, cheese, and butter, but they got jerk chicken flavored popcorn, pizza flavored popcorn, bubblegum flavored popcorn. Popcorn Portrait Popcorn, Gourmet Popcorn, I'm sorry, is located at 50 East 153rd Street in Phoenix, Illinois, located in the Phoenix Plaza off Halsted Street. Their operational hours is Wednesday through Sunday, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m., and their phone number is 708-825-9105. And Layla Sports Bar and Grill, for your banquet needs, sports watching needs, happy hour drinks, hit up Layla. Dancing or just want to get away, Layla's is open Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m., Friday, 7 p.m. to 2 a.m., Saturday, 7 p.m. to 3 a.m., and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Layla's is located at 14908 Chicago Road in Dalton, Illinois, and their phone number is 708-414-1088. That's Layla Sports Bar and Grill Banquets for your banquet, sports watching, dancing, drinking, just want to hang out needs. If you're in the area of Dalton, hit them up. Their address is 14908 Chicago Road in Dalton, Illinois. Phone number 708-414-1088. As always, this show is dedicated to Audrey Smiles. Thank you for listening, Audrey Smiles, on a daily basis of every Saturday night. I appreciate you. Love you like the second mother that I have. And thank you so much. So, without further ado, and I see him in the queue, I'm going to bring on none other than my brother from another mother who's done it all, writing, graphic designing, you name it. He's going to talk about it right now. I see, like a spotlight, let's welcome in tonight, author Navi Robbins. Author Navi Robbins, what's up with you?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm glad to hear that. Glad to
your show,
I appreciate it. I'm glad you took on the opportunity of being on tonight. I appreciate that, too.
I appreciate you bringing me on. Thank you.
Cool. No problem. So as we get started, tell us who Navi Robbins is. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do in the literary world. Just give us a feel for who you are, bro.
Navi Robbins, author, multi-genre author, writing books, young adult paranormal, suspense, romance, horror, espionage, the graphics design, children's book illustrator, publishing solutions. I just do so many different things in the literary industry. Also, I'm a financial analyst, father, confidant, brother, lover, fighter, revolutionary, all-around hustler.
I hear that, bro. And when I was first introduced to you on Facebook, I was so amazed by all the many things that you do and how busy you are. So when I said to myself, if I have a show, I got to have Navi on definitely to talk about all the things you do. I was so happy when he was like, okay, cool, I want to be on your show. And I was like, cool, great. So I get the time, the opportunity to interview you and talk about the things that you've accomplished and all.
Hey,
oh, definitely.
I'm always willing to. Thank you. Always willing to spread the word and get my name out there. That's how it
Cool.
That's how you expand your brand.
Definitely. So, Navi, when did all this start for you? Like the writing, the graphic design, and what was it that prompted you to start doing all of this?
Initially, I started writing ghostwriter for songs, doing songs for artists. So someone would reach out to me and say, hey, I need you to write me a song, and I would do that. And, they pay me up front. I don't get any, writing credits for it. So I started doing that. Then I did that for some time, and then the music industry kind of changed. Some of the record labels that I used to work for or work with went belly up. So I had to, decide to do some other things. Eventually, I wanted to start writing short stories and poetry. And then eventually I said, why not just write a novel? But I wanted to write something that was kind of something that I would have enjoyed, something that was different. Write a story that was different. And then the genre that you wouldn't expect from an African-American author. So my first book, I decided to write it, is a young adult paranormal. And it was around the time when Twilight was hidden and Harry Potter and Hunger Games and those books had been turned into movies. And it took me 2 years to write it, and I really couldn't finish my first book. But then eventually my youngest son, Aiden, was born, and his birth just gave me the inspiration, because it was just like, man, it's another life. I had two children prior to him, and it was like, oh, here it is, I have another life. And it just something sparked in me, like, I mean, what are you going to leave your kids? Are you going to leave them, a portion of your 401k, a retirement watch, or are you going to leave them a legacy? Prompting me to finish my first book.
Okay, cool. And I know you said you mentioned that you had two kids before. And how many total kids do you have?
I have 4 by blood and 6 by love. So 6 total.
Okay.
4 of my own, and then my fiance, she had 2 daughters before we met.
Okay.
So all together,
we're
6.
Okay, cool. Because the reason I'm going there is because when I saw your oldest daughter and the age that she is, and I told you that on Facebook when you had put the post up, I could not believe that because, bro, you look so young. I thought you were like my age, around my age. And when I saw, I'm like, you got a daughter. How old? I'm like, dude, your genes, you have really good genes. Really good genes.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
No problem.
45. I didn't have my first child. I was 26.
Oh, wow.
So I'm 45. Yeah, I started, I guess if you say the norm, I started late. But, yeah, 26 when I had my first child. I didn't think I was going to be, I wasn't ready then, but, you know, life tells you, life, you know, if you don't be careful, life's going to choose for you. So.
That's true. So. Definitely true, definitely true. Like I said, I couldn't believe it because you look so young, and then when you said you were 40, like you say 45, I'm like, this dude, like, he's about 34, 33, somewhere up in there. I'm like, wow. So your oldest to be the age she is, and then for you, I'm like, wow. Okay. Definitely, definitely. So with the writing of The Paranoia, bro, and then the graphic designing came into place after that a little bit, was it at that point that you decided to do graphic designing too?
Yeah. So what happened was when I did my first book, I wrote the first book, Walking Among the Shadows, Awakening, and then I wrote the second one immediately afterwards because it was like once I finished that first book, the floodgates opened. So I hit the second book, and I paid somebody to do my book cover, and I got took.
Oh.
You know, I paid almost $1,000 for those 2 book covers, and I couldn't use them. One of them, and they weren't ugly book covers, but... As a graphic designer, even though your clients come to you and say, this is what I want, it is your duty, because that's your name on that product too. As a graphic designer, it's your duty to advise your client, this ain't it. And a lot of times, you know, people override me all the time, this is what I want, and I give them what they want. But for me, as a graphic designer, because of what happened to me, because someone advised me, hey, this, you know, the graphic design I went to, and I, like, man, 2 covers, I'm paying $450 per cover. I'm expecting for you to say, look, according to the age group that you're going for, this book cover is not going to be appropriate. Because young adults, as you're talking about 12, 13, on up. Now, how's it, you know, a 12 or 13-year-old really ain't making their own money. So the person that you're trying to convince to buy the book is their parents. So if you walk up to a parent with a 12 or 13-year-old child, you can't walk up to them with a book with blood dripping down of it and somebody stabbing somebody in the back. Because there's no way you're going to convince that parent that this book is appropriate for their child. I mean, you already got the kids shooting up schools and stabbing each other. Now I'm telling you, oh, no, this is, you know, your 12, 13-year-old kid that might be getting bullied at school. This is going to be all right for them. No. And as a graphic designer, a.k.a. business owner, if you want repeat business, it is your duty to your brand and your client to advise them that this ain't it. And I didn't get that. So I had to, after publishing my books and unable to sell them, because I couldn't even get past the initial synopsis, because when they're looking at the cover, they're like, this is young adult? So you're telling me my kid that reads Harry Potter can read this book with the stabbing of the back and the blood dripping down? Yeah, it's okay. There's just nothing crazy in it. And they're looking at me like, yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, it's already a hard sell when you it's already a hard sell when you're African American trying, and you wrote in a genre that you're not normally used to writing in, then now you're sitting up here trying to convince someone that this bloody, violent cover is okay for their kids too.
Mm-hmm.
So once I had to take my books down and figure out how I was going to get it done because I didn't have $900. So I spent the next seven to eight months going to YouTube University and learning how to use the software needed, like Photoshop, the whole nine, learning how to use it to order to create my own covers. I already had the imagination. I already had the imagination and the talent. It's just how to use the software. So once I figured that out, I decided to do my first cover. And after a lot of authors saw my first cover of, you know, my revised books, they started hiring me. And the more I started doing, the better I got, and I kept studying. And this graphic designers that are my mentors, and, I mean, these graphic designers who do covers, they charge publishing companies $10,000. And some of them are my mentors, so I'm listening to them. They giving me tools and keys, and the rest is history.
Oh, wow. And I must say, you definitely, I've seen some of your book covers, and they are dope. They definitely are dope. And when, like I said, when I found that
you
did book covers, I was like, no problem, no problem. I said, look at that. Daddy got a lot. This brother do book covers. He do, and banners, too. I didn't even know you did banners until I forgot what author it was that was on your posting when you were doing a banner for her. And I was like, wow, Nabby do it all. I ain't mad. Not mad at all. Man, and like I said, it definitely, but I understand with the whole of you saying that a book cover has to have a certain type of look to it. You can't, you know, have a book out and you're trying to sell it to a young adult with, a, you know, with this type of look on it. It has to definitely have a good look. So I'm definitely feeling you on that with saying that about a book cover needs to have a certain tone to it when you're selling to an audience.
Absolutely. It's, for me, it's when I design book covers for people, it's about will your book cover compete? Because books are judged by their covers. There's no way around it. And so whatever book cover that I design for you, if you were to walk into Barnes & Noble's or any of those other places and you set your book next to any of those other books, will it compete? Will it catch the eye? Or will it stick out like a sore thumb, like this, it's not supposed to be here? So a lot of times I'll go to Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble's and things like that and just look at the new book covers that are coming out and just kind of get an idea and a feel. I don't copy nobody's work. I just kind of like get a feel and an idea of the new trends that are coming in when it comes to book cover design, because there's always a trend that the industry is leaning towards when it comes to book covers or stories or anything like that. So I'm just kind of like looking at it and, okay, so this is what they're doing now. Let me put my own spin on this. So, because the goal for me is to make sure that whoever works with me, I can't write the story for you, but at least I can give you a book cover that competes.
Okay. And you said you do a little ghostwriting too. How's that? How has that been like? Do you enjoy doing that as well, or how did that come about?
The ghostwriting was for music.
Okay.
Because my first love was singing. And I sung professionally for a long time. And my singing was introducing me to some of the record labels to have me ghostwrite. So, but honestly, I love writing better. I love writing more.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Music, especially if you're someone who wants to make it big, you have to understand that your life is no longer yours. And I learned early on that the money and fame is not an even trade-off. As an author, you can be obscure. Mm-hmm. Don't nobody know who you are. Your books are famous. If your books turn into movies, the actors are famous. But, you know, one of the richest authors in the world, J.K. Rowling, can sit next to you on the bus and you don't know who she is. And she's worth $3-4 billion.
Right.
She can shop in Walmart without needing a bodyguard. She can go to the movies without needing a bodyguard. She can go to the beach What I need in a bodyguard. She's not, and you know, she's not being followed by the paparazzi. We don't see her name in the newspapers about something that she did. I mean, she could be married and cheating on her husband with everybody in town, and you'll never know because
right.
her books are famous. Her books are
right.
famous, but she isn't.
Famous.
I mean, even one of the most famous authors, Stephen King, a lot of people don't know how he looks. And he can walk right past you, and you won't know who he is. That's, to me, that's peace. Where you're wealthy, but you can still live your life without being bothered with the fame and all of the drama that come along with it. I'm really not a fan of drama.
Mhm. Mhm. And that's so true because I wondered if people noticed that he was in It too. Because I peeped it.
They probably
in
don't.
It too, and they didn't. And because I asked my friend that seen it too, I said, "Did you know Stephen King had a part in It too?" It's like, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah, he was in the movie." I said, "I bet you nobody, because like you said, Nabby, nobody knows what, you know, who he really looks like. Nobody knew that unless you knew what he looked like." And he was in the movie. He was in the actual movie. Yep.
Yeah. He was a guy in the antique shop.
Yeah, in the antique shop. Yep.
He was a guy who
catch that.
He's been in quite a few of his movies. He was in Pet Sematary. He was in Sleepwalkers.
Okay.
He was in Sleepwalkers. He was the graveyard caretaker.
Okay.
After the guy tried to rape the girl in the graveyard, and she ran off, or he ran off, and the police was there. He was like the graveyard caretaker. He's been in quite a few of his movies. He was in Creepshow, the second one about the growing fungus. So he's been, but I'm a Stephen King fan. You know him as
okay.
his books and him as a human being. So you know when I see him, I'm like, yeah, that's Stephen King. But most people, they are fans of his books, but they don't know
right.
how he looks.
Looks right. And I was sitting there like when I saw that, when I went to the movies to see It too, and I saw it, I said, he was in the movie. I'm like, wow, look at that. He and T shop selling stuff in there. And like, I want anybody else in the show to see that. I just was like, wow. Because I like his other movies. I've never known that until you told me now. You know, and I really didn't see him on the back of his book covers until I started reading his books later on in life. But yeah, like you said, your books will be famous, but if people don't know what you look like or if you want to keep that ambition going, you know, you can walk around the street and you wouldn't be famous and people wouldn't know it, you know?
Yeah. I got some very valuable advice from somebody, a very famous author. I can't name drop. I promise them I would never do it. But
mm-hmm.
they told me that if you're an author and your goal is to be on the red carpet, this is not the industry for you. And it makes perfect
sense.
And I have
sense. To agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. From what I've seen, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, if your goal is to be famous, you know, like you as a person to be famous, this is not, because you're not gonna be that. You're not. It's just not. You know, it's not going to happen for you. Like, either you're going to have your books be famous or you as a person are going to be famous, but you can't do both because the consumers of books, their motivations is different. You have to, when people who read books, avid readers, they fancy themselves as intellectuals. So they're not really, their motivation is different than for someone who consumes a lot of music or consumes a lot of television and movies. You know, those, they want you to be famous. They want you to be caught up in the drama. They want the tea. But those avid readers, they don't want to hear about their author, you know what I'm saying, out here doing crazy stuff. They don't want to hear all of that. That doesn't motivate them. And if they find
right.
that you're just into a lot of drama, it turns them off. A lot of publishing companies, they'll look on your social media pages and just look at how you interact with people. And if you got a lot of drama and a bad name
mm-hmm.
attached to you, they won't sign you regardless of how talented you are. But in other industries like television and music and stuff like that, they will, man, the much drama and following you have, the more attractive you become.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit different. So when that author told me that, it was like, that makes perfect sense. Because, you know, avid readers, they want to escape in your books. They don't want to escape in your personal life. They don't want to see you trying to live the life of the characters in your book. That's, you know.
Yeah. That's, you got a point there, definitely, definitely. And I guess had I would have known what you're saying now, I probably would have shied away from putting pictures of me on my book too, because everything you said is definitely correct. You can't be famous. It's either one or two. Your book's got to either, you know, sell it, or either you're going to, but you're going to have a whole bunch of other drama if you're not attached to drama. So it's like, But I could say, if I'd have known what I know now, I probably wouldn't attach pictures. I probably wouldn't have told so many people that I write books to. You know, it's that suspense that keeps things going too. So I definitely agree with you on that. Definitely. Definitely. So how many books have you published so far?
Nine. Okay. Nine books, but by the end of the year, probably going to be up to about 15.
Okay.
I'm not a book every month author. I can't do it. I can't. There's no way I can do it. I can't. Because I challenge myself with the stories that I write. I challenge myself. Yes. A lot of times, Claire, my fiance, and I be giving her my ideas, and she be looking at me like, you crazy. Like, where did you come up with that story? and it takes time, and you have to really be careful as to how you tell the story, because I don't want to breeze through it or brush through it. I want the devil is in the details for me. So all of the details, and I want the story to be cohesive, and I want it to be different. You know, I'm writing my first urban lit, but I don't want this urban lit to be like any other urban lit. I want it to be in its own lane. I want it to do its, to tell its own story. And so it takes time. So for me, it's like I can't do, you know, a book a month or a book every couple of months. I can't, because then I feel like I'm not challenging myself as a writer. You know, I feel like every book that I write should push me further and should be difficult. If writing a book is easy for me, or writing a story is easy for me, I get a little worried because now I feel like I'm not pushing myself.
Gotcha. Definitely. Definitely on that. And I can say I'm struggling with my fifth, so I understand what you mean by that, because this fifth book should have been ready to the editor, but I'm not ready yet. So I definitely understand when it's a struggle. If it's not, you know, if it's easy to you, then there's something wrong. But if it's a struggle, you definitely got something that you need to work with. Definitely, definitely on that as well. So any events coming up for you? Anything you going? Are you going to Hustle and Grind?
Yes, I will be at Hustle and Grind. A big event is this coming Tuesday. My first book being released by a major publisher. It's this Tuesday, okay. February 25th. Soul Survivors will be in all of your retail stores, your Walmart, your Barnes & Nobles, Books A Million, Amazon, the whole nine. It is an incredible story, and the story is about a doctor who goes to Africa. He's like a doctor without borders, and a warlord attacks the village where he is and his adopted daughter. The warlord murders his daughter and almost kills him. He comes back to the United States. A few years later, the warlord is captured. They want him to test. He's the only surviving person to ever see this warlord at a massacre. They want him to testify in court, and he doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But he suffers from PTSD severely, and they trying to convince him to testify while trying to help him with his PTSD, and the crisis counselor and him, they develop a very dramatic and, I don't want to say ratchet, but I would say, you know, toxic love affair between the two of them, because both of them are victims of the same warlord. So everyone has their own motivations. And the warlord has his own motivation, and he's backed by this international crime syndicate who don't want him to go to jail because he buys hundreds of millions of dollars of weapons from them. And so they're like, we need to figure out how to prevent the doctor from taking a stand. So they send the world's most deadliest hitman or assassin to either bribe him or kill him. Either way, to keep him from taking a stand. So, and there's a whole lot of plot twists. It's like a romance suspense. To kind of look at it like it's like a romance, a suspense with a little Bourne Identity, James Bond thrown in there, and some mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Twists and turns, you're not going to be able to see it. And the main characters are people that look like us. That's one of my main things about my book. I want to put, you know, people of, you know, African Americans or just people of color in situations that you would normally see other people in, you know. And I write the story so you can sit there and be like, I believe this. Like, I can see this brother in this situation. I can see it. I can see it. And that's why a lot of times it's difficult. So that's coming out February the 25th. I have the Literary Affair in South Carolina, March 14th.
Right. You do.
I have the Hustle and Grind.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I went to the one that Teresa had this of last year, so definitely enjoy. Because like it's going to be a little bit better than it was last year.
Yeah, I'm always keeping my fingers crossed. Hustle and Grind in May. The Kickback, I think the Kickback is in July. So Hustle and Grind in May, the Kickback in July. I'm pushing to get myself at the Decatur Book Festival in September, Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to get signed up for a few other events locally here in the Dallas, Texas area as well. But I'm going to be everywhere. You know, I'm going to be promoting the major publisher release that I have, and I'm also going to be promoting my independently published works as well.
Okay, cool. Cool. Definitely. So, Navi, tell the people where they can catch you at on social media if they're looking for any graphic designing. I know you do, is it editing? Typesetting, I believe.
Editing, typesetting, children's books, illustrations, logos, banners, trailers, whatever you need, magazine, whatever you need, printing, whatever you need, I got it for you. They can go to my website for all, you know, like graphics design and everything else like that, graphicstudio.com. That's www.nsgraphicstudio.com. And for children's book illustrations and anything that has to do with children's books, it's www.nschildrensplayground.com. They can find me on Facebook at Author Navi Robbins. They can find me on Instagram at Navi Robbins, and they can find me on Twitter at Anaviel Shadows.
Okay, cool. And before we get out of here, Ian, can you give somebody that wants to write books or whatever, if somebody just ever told and kind of said to you, I should say, Navi, I want to write a book, can you give us 2 pointers that you would give somebody that wants to start out on writing a book?
Copyright everything. I give you a couple more than a couple, but incorporate yourself. Separate your personal life from your life as an author. You'll thank me later. Copyright everything that you do and take your time. Take your time, do everything correctly so that you don't have to go back to suffer, because nothing is worse than putting out a book that's not ready, because once you put that out there, you public property, and the readers can be very unforgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Their first impression can be your last impression.
True. All right, my brother. Well, Navi, I appreciate you coming on tonight, bro. Definitely looking forward to checking out that book. When is it coming again? You said February the 25th. Definitely look forward to checking that out as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed it. And hoping that we can do this again.
Definitely, definitely. And I will definitely see you at Hustle and Grind. It's like everybody is going to Hustle and Grind, man. I will be there. So definitely, I look forward to seeing you at Hustle and Grind, bro.
All right, then. Likewise.
All right, no problem. You take care. Have a good evening, okay?
You too. Thank you.
No problem, bro.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you guys have it. Tonight we talked with author Navi Robin. Any of your designing needs, any of your children's illustration needs, if you need some typesetting, some editing, Navi also does banners. He also does, well, I don't think he does any copyright, he doing any lyrics or music no more. He said he was done with that. So, but yeah, any literary needs. Any literary needs, get at my brother Navi Robins. He is a very cool guy, and I appreciate him being on tonight as well, too. And like he said, definitely copyright and critique yourself in everything you do. Make sure you're putting out a quality product, because in this literary world, people that read books can be very critical. So you want to also always make sure that you're putting out quality work and copyright everything you do. Fire, send it to a person to edit, typeset, whatever you want to copyright first before you send anything off. But Navi Robins, thank you again, bro, for coming on tonight. Like I said, if you guys need any type of graphic designer needs, he gave us information. Or if you didn't get it, he's author Navi Robins on Facebook. You can inbox him. He's author Navi Robins. That's N-A-V-I. R-O-B-I-N-S. So if you didn't get a chance to copy down any of the information he gave you for his services, he's author Navi, N-A-V-I-R-O-B-I-N-S on Facebook. Next week is the last Saturday in February. And February was supposed to be Black History Month, but it didn't really feel like it. I don't know if anybody else can say that, but it did not feel like Black History Month. And let me say this in the last 6 minutes that I got for the show. It seems like it's been a lot of death going on. The devil has really been busy, y'all. I don't know if y'all have we lost Kobe Bryant. We just lost, from Good Times, Wilona. You know, it's so many deaths that have went on, and this is just the second month of the year. Some of my author friends have lost their loved ones, and I just recently lost a good friend of mine who passed from a heart attack, and another lady I sung in the choir with who passed from cancer. So it's just a lot been going on. You got to definitely stay prayed up. If you don't have a relationship with God, and I'm not trying to sway anybody any kind of way that they don't want to go, but I do preach the gospel. I believe in the Lord. Like, I believe in there's a heaven and a hell. Like, I believe in Satan too. But I have a Christian foundation. Despite of me being an author, I have came from Christian roots, so I do fall back on that. So even though I'm going through what I'm going through at my job, I stay prayed up, y'all, because the devil is busy. The devil wants to steal, kill, and destroy any and everything that we do, but we got to stay prayed up. So no matter what you do, if you don't have a relationship with God and you want one, you need to get one, because I'm telling you, it is the best thing in life to have peace of mind. Like, I want to go and do things that I have not done before. Like, I'm going to start signing up for massages, and I want to start doing other different things, because mental peace and mental health is a need for us nowadays. There's so much more, like Navi said, too, with all the drama and negativity. There's so much of that going on. We need a peace of mind, a frame of mind for different things. So it's like, I just let go and let God. People have been asking me, are you worried about getting fired at this job you at, and blah, blah. That's nothing I can do about that. I know it's coming if I don't find another job and leave on them, so I'm prepared for it. It's going to happen what's going to happen. But you brought from one situation and taken out of it to go to something different. What you've been brought to, what God will bring you to it, he'll bring you through it, is what I want to say. So going one situation, you're not going to be there. Trouble don't last always, but you're there for a lesson. And when I say that is, I might be there in that position at that new job to teach my supervisor how she's going to talk to people now. Because when I leave, when all this is over with, you definitely better believe all this that went on, she's going to remember who I am. And maybe, if she don't, but maybe she may not just try it with the next African-American that comes to her department. Because Nelly also mentioned that I was also told this department can't keep people either. When I learned that as I got at the job, it was like, I wonder why this department can't keep people. But I'm not going to prolong it along on that at all. Like I said, what happens is going to happen. I'm here, you know, I know what's going to happen, I should say. If it does happen, I can't worry about it. Give it to the Lord. He works all your problems out. Jesus will work it out if you let him. We've been listening to that song forever, and I can say that definitely. While I'm not trying to figure it out because I know God has already worked it out. I've been here before, so I know what's going to happen in the end result. But next week, we talk to author Melissa Cobb on the last Saturday of February. If you have not, get you a book to read. Go get one of Navi's books and read. If you ain't read one of my books, go get a book. I've been preaching this all month to y'all as a celebration of African-American history. Let's celebrate African-American history, which we only get one month, y'all, and that month goes by so fast. So you want to celebrate as much of our rich culture as you can. And I'm happy about being African-American, you know, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not all races. I have other race friends that have different racial backgrounds, but I love the fact that I'm black. I wouldn't change it at all. And if my blackness intimidates you, that I'm so smart, this and that, well, I'm sorry, but it is what it is. Not going to change, and nothing's going to be different from that any day by day. But next week, we talk to author Melissa Cobb on the last Saturday of the Saturday Spotlight, and then we head into March. After March, I will put a halt to the Saturday Spotlight, as I told you guys, because I'm going to start working on All Marvin's Children. I have my editor, I should say, is on me about getting that manuscript to her pretty soon. This is my fifth novel, if you all don't know about my book, and I have to get this book to her because I should have been finished with it a long time ago. So I'll be putting a halt onto the Saturday Spotlight for a couple of months, and I'll say probably about July I'll come back and restart the Saturday Spotlight. But after March of next month, it's going to be a halt on this, especially with what's going on at this new job. I want to get, you know, being settled back out and this book done so that I can concentrate on the show again. Fortunately, I'll be putting a halt on that in March, but I'll be back in July. So definitely I'll put some more old episodes up at that point. But as always, what you do for Christ is the only thing that will last. Have a good rest of your weekend. Have a good week, and I will see you guys next Saturday on the Saturday Spotlight. Good night. Preview.